What happened? Oh, welcome back to your A-List Lowdown, guys. Coming at you on July 11th, 2025 with traditional extremism and don't pay the ferryman. Should be a good episode. I think we haven't been on a show since last Friday, right? We didn't have a Tuesday because I was camping.
Yeah, it's been weird to have all these accumulations. Like, there seems to be something going on every day. Like, it's either Trump's letter to Carney or, you know, the Epstein files not getting released, Carney's conflict of interest, the ferry scandal, the Calistanis, like, basically owning a shootout. I mean, how do you keep up on all this stuff? It's
like, I'm probably admittedly behind, but I do have some interesting stuff. I've been out of service for a few days, but it should be good. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like, subscribe, share, comment, subscribe. I think it's like 90% of the people aren't subscribed. It hovers between 87 and 90%.
Wow.
So help us get to 1,000. We're almost there. And then that'd be cool. Then we can maybe get some pork going from YouTube. Of course, you guys can support us at a-list.ca and get this in podcast form as well. But the videos are good. You should watch the videos. It's kind of a heavy video show. So where do you want to start?
Well, I mean, do you want to start on the thing that just came out, like right now, like an hour ago?
Sure.
Conflict of interest. I mean, I just added this. I haven't read through it very much, but it'd be interesting to share with you. Oh, how do we do this? These buttons have changed here. Let's see here. Share screen.
Oh, the buttons have changed a little. Oh, there's a little settings button down there.
This is from Andy Lee. She's posting the National Post. So Carney to recuse himself from dealings with over 100 companies in sprawling government conflict screen. National Post. So here's some people just highlighting some of the things here. Let me just zoom in on this a little bit, 1 to 150. Keep an eye on Infinium. That's what Moose on the Loose is always talking about. Green energy fuels and his plan for SAF, which costs at least 400% more. But let's just go back up here. So entropy, carbon capture. He needs to recuse himself straight. TF out of Canada. okay, let's see here. So here's the list. You ready? You ready, Darren?
To be fair, I wonder how many if we had a system like this, because Trump doesn't recuse himself, right? He just gives it over to his kid.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm not.
Trump would have a crazy list of companies too, probably, right? Of stuff that.
I'm trying to articulate the difference between Carney and Trump in this regard. It's just, I think Carney's investments seem more about climate change, green energy, a lot of this stuff, as opposed to just real estate, not just real estate, but you know what I mean? So he's coming in with Paul. I mean, I don't know, maybe Trump does the same thing. I mean, I'm not saying.
I mean, the meme coin thing was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, again, that's, people are saying it just goes right into his pocket, where it doesn't, it goes into some trust or something like that. So who knows if the money will be there in the end. But anyways, this is Annex A. So I've included this annex, my reasons for including each of the entities listed below. Entities being screened because I have a management position or an oversight role in respect of their investing activities on or prior to January 2025. So look at this. There's 32 companies here. All the Brookfields, like five in a row, Scout, Urban Grid, CleanMax. I mean, that's just a lot.
What are the top five all Brookfield?
Yeah. But I don't think this is it. I don't know what order this is in.
I would assume it's in order from biggest stake.
Oh, these are entities. Okay, the A is entities that he has an oversight role or positions, right? And then you go down to B, which is entities being screened because they are Brookfield portfolio companies that appear in the registry of lobbyists maintained by the Office of the Commissioner of Lobbying in Canada. So that's like North River, and there's a couple of Brookfields. And then C is entities being screened out of abundance of caution because they have been identified by the Office of the Conflict of Interest and Ethics Commissioner. So you get that. Based on the public record as of the date of the establishment of the Prime Minister's Blind Trust as being Brookfield related, even though I had no role in managing them and no direct financial interest in them. So these have been identified by the Office of Conflict of Interest. And there's three more Brookfields there. Another 10 or 12 Brookfields going all the way down. Renewable UK. Look at all the Brookfields.
Holy man. I wonder how many Brookfields.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 on that page, and 3. So 17 Brookfield companies that they've identified, but he says he's got no financial interest in them. And then Sagan Mortgage, Black Bear Holding, Oakbrook, EN Wynn, South Plains, Rattlesnake, Terraform. I mean, the list goes on and on here. What, anything in there that catches your eye at all? Inver Energy, banks, renewables.
It's hard for me to read it.
There's another Brookfield Renewable UK. Magna Park, Sunny. And then we go to another 83. So there's five more Brookfields. So there's 103 companies here. Does that make sense? Does that go from 70? Yeah, 82. And then it goes 83. So there's like 20 different Brookfield divisions.
Great Lakes Power Corp.
Yeah, Oak Tree Capital, LCM, Green Energy Fuels, Inver Energy UK again, Ports Holdings. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, the comments are pretty interesting. Like I said, that stuff, entropy, carbon capture. Miss Lee, it's time for you to consider a nom de plume or an alias. Some name in Mandarin comes to mind. You may be viewed as a threat by those without imagination. And then you want to listen to a bit of this clip here?
If funding, which is now increasingly available, or so capital.
This is for that Infinium aviation fuel, this greener aviation fuel that sounds like he might be implementing, or the government might be implementing in some project to build a few planes in BC or something like that, or a new airport or some sort of base.
Which is now increasingly available is the second step, and policy is the first.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you may be seeing a path back to the public sector?
Well, I do spend some time advising on what, you know, again, pro bono, but advising on the types of policies that are going to have.
Pro bono, Darren, did you catch that? Pro bono advising policies
have maximum impacts for investors. So I'll give you an example, which is one of the issues. It's not the biggest issue. It's like 2% of global emissions. You wouldn't know it from the headlines, but 2% of global emissions is for air travel, emissions from air travel. Now, so the question is, are we going to have green, sustainable aviation fuel? What's happened in the UK, the EU, is they've said to major airlines, look, if you're flying in and out of Heathrow or wherever, you have to have 10% of your load has to be sustainable aviation fuel by, I think right. It's 2030. Consequence of that policy has been to convert some entrepreneurs in Texas, in this case, a company called Infineon, to become economic, because all of a sudden American Airlines, British Airways need to buy that fuel.
To become economic? I mean, really? Is that the way he's saying it?
They'll pay a green premium. You've got an offtake.
Economically, you know, viable, because credit quality, or not, they couldn't and exist. This is in not that case,
Brookfield put $1 billion to work there, and you know, it's a fantastic opportunity.
I mean, I don't know. Is that corruption or just really smart business dealings? You know,
Well, it's not corruption yet.
Well, I mean, if you're pushing new policies and then investing in the solution.
But he's also invested in a bunch of traditional energy things.
I know, but in this instance, right? If you're pushing policy, that's to help your investment. I mean, it's kind of corruption, isn't it? I mean, should you be allowed to fucking pull strings like that when you go and invest in a Texas company to make this green fuel and then going to get to UK and all these massive airports to start?
Well, the entire US Congress is doing it every single day, completely out in the open, and everyone seems to be fine with it. So I guess that's something we got to decide. I don't know what I would say that our system seems tighter than that.
Yeah. Okay. Hear me out. We need a carny tracker like the Pelosi one. Just a bit of conflict of interest. Politicians used to be terrified to get caught in conflicts. Not anymore in Lib Uniparty Canada. But yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's just as bad. I mean, it's bad in the States too. So,
all right. Well, let's jump over to this one now. This is my, this is a part of my main piece. This is a, we'll start with this. So actually, no, maybe we should start with maybe we should start with this one. Doesn't want to let me in.
Which one are you trying to get to? Maybe I have it.
New York Times.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I got it. Perfect. Okay, I'm going to share this one instead. I probably can't zoom in. I can zoom in without breaking everything. So that's good. Come on.
Your maybe later didn't click.
Oh my God. Just everything wants money. Money.
Oh, no, you can't click on the maybe later.
This was blowing up in our chat. Well, I was trying to save it for this. You kind of know it wasn't going to make it, but I was trying. Four charge an extremist plot to seize land near Quebec City. The men who were arrested have links to Canada's military, and the police recovered a large cache of guns and explosives. You know, the first thing it made me think of was Jeremy McKenzie for some reason.
Very diagonal.
As part of a terrorism investigation, four men with links to the Canadian military have been arrested and charged with planning to forcibly seize land near Quebec City in what police described on Tuesday as an act of ideological motivated violent extremism. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police said three of the men took concrete actions to facilitate terrorist activity and face terrorism charges. The authorities say they had seized a large stockpile of guns, explosives, and ammunition from the group. Most, if not all, of those arms were stolen from military bases. The fourth man faces a number of firearms and explosive charges. The men charged with terrorism offenses were identified as Marc Aurel Chabot, Raphael Legace, both of Quebec City's, and Simon Angers Odette of Newville and Matthew Forbes out of Point Rouge. Mr. Forbes and Mr. Chabot are corporals in the Canadian Armed Forces stationed at a large base northwest of Quebec City. The military said in a statement on Tuesday evening, the armed forces added that another of the accused men is a former member of the Canadian Forces. Well, the fourth man was once a civilian instructor with the RC, Royal Canadian Air Cadets. They were all arrested Tuesday morning. In the statement, the police said that the men had been facing the terrorism charges that have been planning to create an anti-government militia. Photos released by the Mounties show seven people wearing what appear to be Canadian military fatigues and brandishing or firing weapons during what the police described as a military-style training. The group dates to 2021. It was not a particularly sophisticated endeavor. The photos posted by the police on Tuesday, for example, came from the group's social media account.
This so sounds a little suspect. I mean, I hate to say it, but it just sounds
not like a criminal offense to be on Instagram or to follow them or any of that, as long as you're not willing to use violence, Sergeant Habel said. There's no evidence to show that they were willing to take it to the next level. In raids leading up to Tuesday's arrest, the police in January 24 seized 16 explosive devices, 83 firearms, and about 11,000 rounds of ammunition, about 130 magazines, four pairs of night vision goggles.
Hang on a sec. Can you go back up then? So how
it has sort of like,
but she says there's no evidence
with them all being from the military.
She says there's no evidence. Of it. And then what?
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me at all.
Could be me, but I don't think it is.
Well, I didn't change anything here, so let's see. Yeah,
let's see if I can hear this clip, and then we'll know if it's my fault.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to jump over to here and see if this works. Ah, darn it.
Okay, yeah.
I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Let me see if I hear this clip. I can't hear this clip.
No, I can't hear you.
What has happened?
Some people
Oh, now it's on. The ads are playing.
The volume level has gone down to zero again somehow. Interesting.
Yeah, you've got some real bad technical gremlins happening today.
Coffee gremlins.
Coffee gremlins.
Now, where is my clip gone? Is this it? No. Let's see if this works. What is going on? This was a video a minute ago. Didn't I just like try and play it?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah. Oh, wasn't this a video just a minute ago? Did it get?
Well, there was an ad playing. So I don't know what happened there. There was an ad playing on it, but.
Supposed to be a video,
but I do want you to go back to that other thing. I was commenting, but you couldn't hear me comment on it. But
what did you say?
Well, the New York Times thing. I mean, it said there was no evidence, and then it talked about a whole bunch of evidence. And then I wanted you to read the very last part. It talked about the far right utopia thing.
Oh.
So I was going to ask you, is that what triggered that traditional values equals extremism clip? Is that what you were playing?
Yeah, that's what the clip
is. Is this what triggered the whole thing?
So, a bunch of evidence.
Okay, so just wait a sec. Okay, right there. There was no good research. Hang on a sec. There was a point when she said there was no evidence. No evidence of other terrorist plots by its members. She said there was no evidence of other terrorist plots. Then you went on to read about all they found all the weapons and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think there was no evidence that they were ready to use violence against anyone.
Okay.
And then the last thing, the last sentence is all far-right movements basically have at their core this utopian vision of we will take over this land and we'll create a whites-only kind of society.
That's all far-right movements, really, eh? So is this the guy that came on and said a bunch of people joined the military just to go to learn how to kill brown guys? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, that's probably the same guy. I would assume that's the same guy. All right, let me see if I can get this dang clip to play. I mean, if I had to guess, it seems like it was. Well, let's see. We could try the longer one.
Sure. I mean, people are sharing like the 10-second one, so maybe it would be good to play the longer one anyways.
Yeah, it's just going through the ads because I had that one all queued up and through the ads already.
Oh, I see.
And now, of course, they don't give you an option to even skip the ads. I mean, how do these people even exist anymore?
Are you talking about the mainstream or?
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's painful.
It's painful. Painful. I mean, even the alternative in Canada is starting to piss me off too, honestly.
Well, it's these headlines that they come up with. I have one for later, the CTV News. I mean, they're just bullshit. They're almost outright lies, their headlines.
Yeah, and they seem to be more aligned than they ought to be half the time too, you know? But anyway, I digress. Let's see if this works now.
And the RCMP has come out since then.
What'd they say?
They've clarified the statement.
Yeah, I got that too next.
Okay, good.
Yes, Staff Sergeant with the RCMP and Sergeant DeBell, thank you for taking the time for CTV today. Can you tell us more about these allegations and what they mean?
Well, what I can tell you is that it's a big win for us to have these charges laid. Ideologically motivated violent extremism is something that worries the RCMP across the country. It's something that is...
I mean, the real problem is they stole the weapons. Other than that, it's just some dudes having fun in the woods, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly, exactly. And I,
to investigate,
it's not good when you're stealing guns.
Yeah,
from the army. I mean, you're gonna get yourself in trouble.
They them sounds a lot higher of a voice than I expected.
Oh, is this an it?
Oh, dude.
Gates, yeah. But that really needs to be dealt with. So having this investigation after a little over 2 years going to arrests and charges being laid is something we're very proud and happy about.
Just gleeful
can
about
you tell
this.
Me as well about
we found some extremists.
The searches that were conducted. I understand these happened back in January of last year, 2024.
Yeah, so we received information in March 2023 and then started the investigation and then did everything that that was needed in order to get to having enough information to obtain the search warrants, and then seized, like you mentioned, a lot of firearms and explosive devices and military equipment. And then following those seizures, we were able to get more information. And that led to arrests today. So it's people outside the police forces like have to follow the criminal codes, like just in their everyday life. And then we also have to follow the criminal code when we investigate. And then that means getting the necessary legal authorization in order to get more information and to feed our investigations. So that that takes a little while sometimes.
Yeah, we have a graphic we're going to bring up if we can, just to show the four individuals here and their names and their ages as well. I wonder how serious is this? You know, people say and do things all the time. This seems to have been...
Oh, I just got a head rush.
If you
what
just
is the point of doing that?
You're laughing because the graphic doesn't show any faces, it's just silhouettes.
In a different so you have layer, a list though, of names, basically. Actually training and with
which they already gave us
weapons and ammunition and perhaps a plan to seize property as well. What do you make of that?
Well, of course, it's serious, and it's something that we've kept an eye on, and where public safety was a priority throughout the investigation for sure. The fact that we could charge with facilitating a terrorist activity, that it means that people were actually preparing, were taking actions that led us to believe that they wanted to actually achieve something and wanted to commit this violent terrorist act. So of course it was very serious, and it's dangerous. We don't know exactly what could have been done, but when someone is at the point of wanting to seize property, then the plan is really ongoing, and we needed to make the arrest. We're also part of ensuring public safety to make sure that that the plans were stopped and that everyone was secure today.
Obviously, we've heard many stories in the United States of similar style militia seizing property and standoffs with government forces.
Really, buddy?
It's worth mentioning that in the States, militias are constitutionally protected right.
This is quite new in Canada. I wonder if you're able to give us any sense, Sergeant Habel, how close these men may have been to actually carrying out operations.
Close enough that we arrested them, and close enough that we were investigating, and but not close enough for that people years. were put in danger.
And what happens now? What's the next steps here in this case?
This case is pretty much done, so we'll wait and see what now it's on to the maybe a trial, maybe a court. It's now in the hands of the prosecutors. It's the next step. And for us, if we get further information, if we find out something that would mean we would need to reopen this investigation or to start a new one, then we would do that for sure.
And you're confident that it begins and ends with these four, that there are no others that may have been involved?
We can never say that no one would have been involved or that no one is planning the same kind of events in the country, because most of the recruiting and the radicalization is happening online. And then the internet has no boundaries, and it's so omnipresent in our lives that we don't know where someone might be radicalizing or having falling for that that ideology. So something could happen somewhere else. And that's why we have teams all across the country that are working hard at ensuring our national security.
Yeah, Sergeant Camille Abel joining us from Montreal with the RCMP with the very latest on this big investigation, arresting four people charged with terrorist activity, trying to form an anti-government militia and seize property near Quebec City. Sergeant, thanks so much for taking the time for CTV News. Much appreciated.
So it wasn't even in that one.
Well, yeah, it wasn't in that clip. So, I mean, Joe's got a good point here in the chats. Do they have any recordings, texts? I mean, I didn't remember seeing anything in, when you read the New York Times article.
Okay, wait, but this is a clip again. So let's see.
I'd like to actually hear some concrete something that they went, but they're just saying, you know what she's saying? Well, there was enough evidence because we arrested them. I mean, that's her excuse. That's her evidence, is that they arrested them. So there must've been enough of that. Besides it being okay to be on Instagram and to have guns and all that. I mean, I guess the stolen weapons was the evidence. That's the only thing I heard that was not, that they, you know,
something's going on with this clip. It's like they're in the process of trying to scrub it from the internet.
Are you talking about the clip where they actually said, I've got, you want me to try it? I've got it here.
Wait, I got it. Let's see if this works.
Often will show by people, radicalization in general, quite often will show by people isolating themselves and changing their behavior, like changing what they're saying on a subject, like becoming more extremist. Like, and if someone you know was very believed in equal gender rights, but all of a sudden are leaning towards like traditional values, and that might be a sign that they're becoming more extremist. But we also have to remember that having the most extremist views is perfectly legal in Canada, and that it's only acting with violence to prove that view that becomes a criminal offense.
So pause it. I mean, that's not even true, right? I mean, there's hate speech laws, so it's not about violence only. I mean, and you can't.
Why, these guys didn't do anything violent.
Right. Well, they stole, unless they stole. They stole weapons.
But is that violence?
Well, it's breaking the law. I mean, that's the point, is that.
Stole stuff, you're not a violent offender, though.
But she's saying it's okay to have extremist views as long as you're not violent. Well, it's not, because we can't have extremist views, because.
You can have them, you just can't say them.
Right. Yeah, right. You got the clarification too then? Or?
I've got the clarification here. RCMP clarifies stance on traditional values. The RCMP is clarifying remarks made by an officer discussing radicalization in a video clip that sparked controversy, with the police force headquarters saying it was not suggesting that someone with traditional values is an extremist. So if you're not gay, saying gay, right? She just, a submissive wife, is that what she was getting at?
I know. You used to believe that the men and women were equal, but now you've got traditional values.
Since when were women not equal in traditional values? I mean, the RCMP is in no way implying that embracing traditional values makes an individual radical or extreme, spokesperson Mary Eve Breton told the Epoc Times in a statement on July 9th. Staff Sergeant Camille Habel told the public broadcaster that an individual who is radicalizing may show signs such as isolating themselves or changing their behavior or stance on a topic. She said if someone was once a strong believer in equal gender rights, but all of a sudden are leaning towards like traditional values, then that might be a sign they're becoming more extremist. Habel added that having the most extremist views is perfectly legal. Various clips of Fabel's interview on CBC garnered hundreds of thousands of views and reactions on the X social media platform. The JCCF commented by saying, "No RCMP having traditional values does not make you an extremist." Barry Bussey, a lawyer and president of the First Freedoms Foundation, also reacted and asked for more context to understand Fabel's comments. He said that the RCMP and other federal institutions appear to be influenced by postmodern ideological views on what is deemed acceptable. Instead of focusing on those adopting traditional values, which for many is a sign of spiritual maturity, perhaps our institution should address the sources of street violence. What else we got here? It's observed that sometimes sudden change in one's behavior, beliefs, or goals, as well as tolerating the use of violence to achieve those goals, that could be one of several factors that signal shift towards extremism. Each instance would have to be examined on a case-by-case basis, and all indicators would have to be considered in their totality. The RCMP said three of the accused were planning to create an anti-government militia and have been charged with knowingly facilitating terrorist activity, an offense punishable by up to 14 years in prison for playing with their guns. The individuals accused are The RCMP said those planning to create anti-government militia had taken part in survival and ambush training and had conducted a scouting operation. Firearms, including some prohibited and illegal high-capacity magazines, were allegedly used in these activities. So, a couple things of note. Those probably none of those weapons were prohibited up until the liberals wrote some words down on a piece of paper a couple years ago. They were probably, most of the cases, they probably weren't even restricted. They were probably just over-the-counter firearms. And high-capacity magazine is just every magazine they sell with the little, with the rivet taken out.
I have something on that.
Do you? Okay, good. I'm about done here.
Okay, I'm going to switch order a little bit here, but Marty up north was talking about this. The RCMP Commissioner of Firearms report for 2024 was tabled on time in the House of Commons last month. Oddly, it was also released on time on their website. It contains a lot of positive information that shows Canadians are definitely pro-gun and willing to comply with some of the most stringent firearms licensing requirements. Our pre-2021 rules were 100% adequate and reasonable. Canadians were willing to get licensed and use their firearms in approved ways. There was no need for Trudeau's gun bans, which is what you were talking about. Let me show you some stats from the report. The report only ever shows the five previous years of data. I have to create my own historical spreadsheet with nearly 20 years of data to show proper trends. So here is a snapshot of 2024. I don't know if we need to go through all this. Crime, guns identified, firearms traced, firearms included. So let's just skip past that and say, so 2.4 million Canadians hold a license in one form or another. That's huge. That's roughly 6% of the population. I estimate that there is at least one firearms license holder in 8 to 12% of all households in this country. The rate at which people are getting licenses is higher post-COVID than before. Intelligent people know what
it's
can
probably happen. Higher than that. Because in most households, it's going to be the man that has, yeah. Like I have a firearms license. No one else in my house has one.
Yeah. Intelligent people know what can happen to population.
Jesse has a firearms license. No one else in his family has one. You know what I mean? Miles has one. No one else. You know, like almost everybody I hunt with, the dude that hunts is the only person with the firearms license. So it's probably, you could bring that number up to 15 to 18% of households.
Yeah. Then he gets into like firearms, handguns, and all that here. I haven't gone through all this yet, but we used to have to register all firearms. The ratio of non-restricted to restrict guns was around 9 to 8. I use that to estimate that Canadians own at least 50 million firearms. Over 500,000 are prohibited from owning guns. These are typical criminals. Does that include the 17,000 criminals that we brought in from other countries?
Or probably not.
Probably not, eh? They're allowed to carry swords, not guns, or just...
Probably both.
So I don't know if I want to go through all this, but I do want to get to this. Ian Runkle was posting some of this. He says, this is a different thing altogether. Great. This one drops while I'm at an airport. Going to try to record a video once I'm situated. So this is that kind of episode. I don't know. You must have heard about this. He shot and killed an 18-year-old and was acquitted because his neighborhood felt like Iraq. So meanwhile, in at least one case, Canadians who defend their families during violent home invasions, some involving guns, hammers, and masks, masked repeat offenders are the ones getting charged. This is what a decade of gutless leadership looks like. So this jury acquits a teen who claims self-defense in fatal Toronto school shooting, saying he carried a gun because his neighborhood was like Iraq.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see more precedent like that set.
Yeah, you could have some nerve to talk about the obvious racial and ethnic difference, blah, 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 two-tier policing. And then Runkle said here, he followed up on this. Also, as predicted, the Liberals continue to prohibit more firearms by sneaky and entirely bullshit reclassification without actually passing new OICs and laws slash laws. The R9 isn't an AR-180. It's a variant or a variant of it, but they can't just define variant to mean anything and then say banned. So I thought this was about the other thing too, but it's not. We should. I'll check Ian's out. Ian's stuff on that, the gun stuff out. Maybe we'll go into it more next time. Because yeah, we got to get him on the show at some point too.
Oh yeah, he expressed interest. All right, well, let's jump over to this local, somewhat local to me, not far away. Calgary court overturns acquittal of pastor charge after drag time story protest. The Court of King's Bench, Alberta, has overturned the acquittal of a Calgary pastor in connection to his protests of drag story time events, in order to retrial in the Alberta Court of Justice. Pastor Derek Reimer was previously arrested and charged after protesting library drag queen story times for children between 2023 and 2024. In September 2024, a court acquitted him of causing a disturbance and mischief in connection with a February 25th, 2023 protest at a drag story time event at Calgary's Seton Library. In the decision handed down on July 9th, Justice Nancy Carruthers found the judge who acquitted Reimer on the charges relating to his protest at Seton Library made legal errors in his decision. Reimer told the Epoch Times in an interview that the reversal of the acquittal effectively starts his legal process all over again and is considering his legal options in response. Now I'm going to retrial for causing mischief and causing a disturbance back in my original charges back in February 2023, and we're doing it all over again. Justice Carruthers' ruling is extremely rare, according to Reimer's lawyer, Andrew McKenzie. He called the decision troubling, saying that decision by Justice Alan Fradsman, who acquitted Reimer, had been cited by courts in 7 provinces and more than 30 written decisions. His legal expertise should be given deference, and this may give rise to further appeal. Reimer was arrested on May 8th after the court determined he was in violation of his conditions of release for showing up early to court. Reimer said he was attended early as some of his congregation and supporters would pray for him to pray with him on the steps of the courthouse. So they charged him for showing up early for his court so he could pray with people. Reasonable person could very well assume that if you're going to your own court date where the Crown has appealed your acquittal, you pretty much have to be there. His supporters would also hold rallies for him while he was in jail. I don't know if we have to get into the additional charges. He was found guilty of criminal harassment after he posted a Facebook video of a conversation between himself and the manager of a Calgary library where a drag reading event was being held. Reimer included the name and work contact details of the manager, encouraging supporters to express their opposition to the event by contacting the manager. At the time, he was also convicted. I mean, he got charged for that? Criminal harassment? At the time, he was also convicted for breaching his bail conditions, which prohibit him from attending drag story time events. We should just give all the kids that same jail condition. The court dismissed 2 charges of causing public disturbance. So we got that on the one hand, which is interesting. And then if we jump over to, now I just want you to think about that. So they went to all the trouble to dig up this guy's thing, to recharge him a year later because they didn't think that it was done right. So there, which I thought was illegal. I guess, do we have double jeopardy laws in Canada?
I don't know.
Can you find out while I'm doing this? Because in the States, you can't try someone twice for the same offense, right? Or is it just a retrial thing? Well, in the meantime, we got this going on at the same time, which is what kind of makes it Canadian. High-risk sex offender to live in Winnipeg. Richard Kofi Asante has not completed sexual offender treatment and remains a high risk to reoffend. Here he is. This is the guy. He's been released from prison and is now expected to live in Winnipeg. And he's a high risk to reoffend. Okay?
Yeah.
And we're going after this other guy.
Yeah.
For protesting. How long do you think this guy was in jail for?
This guy here, 18 months.
They said they're going 14 years for those Quebec boys. That's what they're going after.
Okay.
What do you think this guy got?
I said 18 months.
It'd be pretty close. A convicted sex offender with a history of violent assault has been released from prison and is expected to return to Winnipeg, and police are now warning he continues to be a high risk to commit additional sex crimes. The Manitoba Integrated High Risk Offender Unit said in a Wednesday news release that 34-year-old Richard Kofi Asante was released from the Edmonton Institution on Wednesday on statutory release after serving part or more of a 3-year sentence. Part or more. I mean, anything could be part or more, couldn't it?
Yeah. They can't even give you those details.
Part of a more than 3-year sentence.
Oh.
On June 19th, 2023, Asante was convicted of a sexual assault with a weapon and sexual assault by choking, suffocating, and strangling. He received a prison sentence of 3 years, 1 month, and 3 days. Asante is now expected to reside in Winnipeg, police said. He has not completed sexual offender treatment and remains a high risk to sexually reoffend against women. Sorry, bitches. He was convicted after sexual assault offenses that occurred on July 9th, 2021. Police say Asante met the victim via social media before meeting her in person. He became angered by a comment from the victim, which resulted in him choking her. When she screamed for help, he held a large knife to her throat, continued to choke her to unconscious, and proceeded to commit violent sexual offenses, which I'm assuming is raping. He is described as 5'10", 200 pounds with black hair and brown eyes. He has a tattoo on his right forearm that reads Sante and tattoos on his right wrist of 2 playing cards. Hey, he's also black, just in case people are wondering. You notice how they don't mention that?
Yeah.
Upon release, Asante was subject to several conditions, including not consuming alcohol or drugs and following a treatment plan focused on emotional regulation, substance abuse, and violence.
Well, I mean, I'd love to know how long he served out of the 3 years, because if the cops have to warn people that somebody's coming out of jail, that's a bit weird, isn't it?
It said he served about 2 years. Plus, he was probably in custody before that, so maybe 4. He must also immediately report all relationships and friendships with females. And maybe just don't let him out. Yeah, if you got to jump through this many hoops.
I know, that's what's weird about it, right?
Like how that he choked her unconscious and raped her. I mean, when I was a kid, that would have been, you'd assume that you're going to jail for fucking 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Police say they have released the information about Asante's release to allow members of the public to take measures to protect themselves, but warned any form of vigilante activity towards him will not be tolerated. Anyway.
Yes, we have double jeopardy laws in Canada. Any person charged with an offense has the right, if finally acquitted or convicted and punished, not to be tried or punished for the same offense again.
Except for that guy,
the preacher.
Except
for the preacher protesting drag queen story hour.
Yeah, you don't get it.
Yeah.
What about this one? We were talking about this a long time ago. So internal ArriveCan report sealed by federal court order. Why do we need to know? Why is it sealed?
Yeah.
But Buddy's got to get retried for mischief, for protesting. A federal court judge has temporarily blocked the distribution of an internal ArriveCan investigator's report after a former Canada Border Service Agency manager requested it be sealed. In his July 7th decision, Justice Henry Brown said former CBSA Director General Cameron McDonald had established he would face irreparable harm to his professional reputation if the report was distributed. I mean, I think you just suffered the irreparable harm just by saying that you would have suffered irreparable harm. The allegations each side makes against the other are most serious, wrote Justice Brown in the decision, which was first covered by Blacklock's reporter. They deserve a full hearing. Brown granted a temporary injunction against the distributing or disseminating of the final draft of the Professional Standards Investigation Report. Brown noted that the underlying facts in the case are heavily contested and that the parties involved dispute the timeline, purpose, merits, and procedural fairness of this investigation and report. McDonald and former CBSA employee Antonio Yutano both worked on the development of the ArriveCan app, $55 million ArriveCan app. While employed by the CBSA, they were suspended without pay over allegations of misconduct related to the app's development. They alleged, well, I mean, clearly something was going on, right? They alleged that the suspicions were an attempt to silence their criticism and have said they're being scapegoated by current and former executives of the CBSA. McDonald and Yutano told a parliamentary committee in 2024 they were targeted for telling the same committee that senior CBSA executives misled parliament when they appeared before MPs earlier in the fall to answer questions about the ArriveCan app. An internal preliminary statement of facts completed in 23 by the CBSA has never been made public. McDonald and Yutano requested back in 23 that the report be rescinded, claiming they were denied procedural fairness during the agency's investigation, were not told of the details of the complaint that triggered the investigation. Conservative MP Larry Brock read out a portion of the report at the 2024 meeting of the House of Commons Government Operations Committee, saying that alleged serious employee misconduct, so serious that the CBSA required the RCMP to investigate at least two criminal charges, fraud and bribery. He added that the report said an ArriveCan contractor had also solicited a bribe. McDonald said in a testimony before the committee in 2024 that he delivered a detailed costing of $6.3 million for the app and was not responsible for its $60 million price tag. A non-binding motion for GC Strategies to reimburse $64 million to taxpayers within 100 days recently passed in the House of Commons, despite Liberal MPs voting against it. Non-binding. What's the fucking point? The ArriveCan app, which was used to track the COVID-19 vaccination status of travelers entering Canada, became the center of a scandal over the exorbitant costs of building it and issues related to the procurement process. Critics said it would have been developed for a fraction of its estimated $60 million cost, while the Auditor General said record-keeping around its development was poor. So, ArriveCan back. They're just...
Sealed it up to protect the criminals, basically. Sealed it up
to protect somebody.
Somebody's reputation.
Yeah.
Well, just after that whole, all those headlines about giving their money back, and if that really makes a big difference. It's, they're wasting billions, but you know that's a problem. Well, let's go over some media stuff then. The media, we gotta do this. So, I mean. With all the stuff going on with Trump and Carney now, I mean, Trump's not doing any favors to our relationship for sure with the states, but this is why people are afraid to travel down to the states. So this is CTV News, right? They punish people for nothing. Family of Canadian woman detained by ICE pleads for help to bring her home, right? Have you seen this? All these articles?
No.
Yeah. Here's a fix.
We got a strike on TikTok for one of our ICE videos.
Wow. Was it pro ice or ice cubes?
I think it was when we were talking about Buddy dying.
Oh, geez. Woman spends years working illegally and publicly in the U.S., gets into a physical domestic altercation in public in the U.S. in which she injures someone, is detained for illegally being in the U.S. and injuring a person. There, I did your job for you. I mean, this is where we're at. And I mean, I've seen this deconstruction on this before when it came up before too. It's just the manipulation, tell the real story, right? I mean, this is the pushback is quite interesting now that they just can't get away with it anymore on X, right? But I mean, all they need for the elbows up crowd is another story, and it scares the shit out of everybody. I mean, Trump's latest letter, which I do have a copy of. I don't know if you want to get into or not, though. Increasing the tariffs by 35% has got everybody in a tizzy all over again. And meanwhile, Carney's like, I don't know, he's either at the Bohemian Grove burning or on vacay or something. But So I don't know if we want to get into all that, but we can keep going on the CBC here, because as this is from Trish Wood. So as someone who is nearly destroyed by CBC's arrogant top-down culture run by a few favored journals and managers, I can vouch for this chap's account. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's last name. Donraj? Travis Donraj has huge courage, but good luck finding a lawyer who will take the case. Travis, do reach out if you can. So have you seen this letter? The whistleblower from the CBC? Have you heard about it?
I have heard rumblings.
Yeah, it's another thing that's happened while you're gone there, but this is his resignation letter. I think it's worth reading it just to document this whole thing on our show here. Dear colleagues, after more than 20 years in Canadian television journalism, I've been forced to resign from CBC News. This is not a voluntary decision. It comes after trying to navigate a workplace culture defined by retaliation, exclusion, and psychological harm, a place where asking hard questions about tokenism, masquerading as diversity, problematic political coverage protocols, and the erosion of editorial independence became a career-ending move. I was once one of CBC's most visible journalists, a senior parliamentary correspondent, co-host of Marketplace, and most recently host of Canada Tonight, promoted as a symbol of progress, until I began questioning the gap between CBC's stated values and its internal reality. When I pushed for honest conversations about systematic issues and editorial imbalance, I was shut out, sidelined, silenced, and ultimately erased. CBC calls itself a champion of inclusion and public trust, but those ideals are too often deployed as branding tools, not lived principles. And Canadians are noticing what's happening inside this institution is no longer just an internal problem. It's a public one. The erosion of trust in the CBC didn't happen overnight. It's the result of years of dysfunction at the highest levels, where a small group of insiders on air and in management wields outsized influence, prioritizes spin over substance. Leadership clings to reputation while failing to confront the real reasons viewership is in free fall. CBC doesn't need more workshops. It needs more accountability. It needs accountability. It needs reform. It needs courage. To those still inside, silence shouldn't be the price of your paycheck. The only thing that sustains broken systems is fear. And the only way things change is when people speak. I don't know what's coming next, but I know there will be efforts to discredit me, spin, smears, the usual playbook. But I'm not here to protect comfort. I'm here to speak truth, even if I have to do it from the outside. To those who stood by me, thank you. I'll miss the good people I worked with, many of whom are still trying to do journalism the public deserves under impossible conditions. I leave with clarity and my voice intact. You'll hear more from me soon. So I think he's been on a couple shows too and all that. So Trish adds, let me add, there is absolutely a crew there of favored and captured journos who rule like Chairman Mao. When they turn on you, it's over. Oddly, they think they're morally superior to everyone else. And then they talk about his lawyer. I hope she sticks. I had a top lawyer. This is Trish saying, I had a top guy who dropped out because my so-called union wanted me to use their guy who was in the tank for CBC and terrible. In the end, I found a young new lawyer who was okay. It was a nightmare. High-level friends now retired from CBC have apologized for how it went down. So very wrong how this happened. CBC and the whole industry needs to be completely reset. I hope Travis and others find focus to start an independent competitive network. Do what you love. We could sure use your proper unbiased investigative journalism. So yeah, it's interesting. Tell me you never had a real job without telling me. Yeah, he was nearly destroyed. Guy, how about I use my national platform on your network to call the boss a corrupt cunt? HR, how about no, guy? I'm going to stress leave for 6 weeks. Oh, I don't need to read all that. Anyways, what were you going to say?
Did you see Northern Perspectives is suing the Make Canada Great Again channel?
Why?
Just for some stuff he said about them being related. I mean, it's a whole thing I don't want to get into here, but it's worth going in. If you read it, I'd be curious to hear your opinion on it off here. I don't want to get drug into any bullshit with thin-skinned Canadians.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got, let's do this one, and then I've only got one more.
Well, we got to do that. We got to do the fairy survey, because that's what my title is about.
Fairy ad. It's funny, I grabbed it. I was like, oh, an ad survey. Grandma loved that. So this is the police force from Corey Morgan. In March of this year, Public Safety Canada released a report titled A New Policing Vision for Canada, Modernizing the RCMP. Among the many suggestions within the report, one said that the federal government should be committed to working closely with provinces to support a transition away from contract policing. The government feels the time has come to turn the RCMP into a more federally focused force and move away from rural and provincial police services. On July 2nd, so that was from Public Safety Canada. On July 2nd, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith held a press conference to announce an expansion of the Alberta Sheriff's Service into the role of a provincial force. While she didn't expressly say the role of the expanded force was to replace the RCMP, she did say municipalities could choose to replace the contracted RCMP services with the provincial sheriffs. Now, it would be nice if we could vote for them. That seems to be the best system, right? When you get to vote for your sheriff. The negative response to Smith's announcement wasn't expected in Alberta's polarized political environment. Yet, what is the premier expected to do when the provincial contract with the RCMP is expiring in 2032 and the force is indicating it plans to stop leasing out its services?
What?
Is it fair? It is fair to question Smith's motives with a new force, though. The premier is facing pressure from a growing provincial independence movement on her right flank, and moving away from federal police services could be a way to toss them a bone. Her move could be characterized as a capitulation to separatists, which may further inflame regional tensions. So it's worth mentioning that I think it's Newfoundland, Quebec, and Ontario already have that. The RCMP is an internationally recognized and respected symbol of Canada. It is one of the oldest police forces in the world. It is also due for changes in modernization. Morale among the force is low, and they have experienced a crisis in the ability to recruit new members. Critiques of the workplace culture and management have become commonplace, and alleged political interference from the Prime Minister's office during the Nova Scotia shooting investigation undermined confidence in the independence of the force. If the RCMP can't implement some solid reforms, the entire force could collapse at a time when Canada is trying to reignite national pride and identity. Losing a symbol as powerful as the Mounties would come as a blow. Ontario, Quebec, Newfoundland, and Labrador all have provincial police forces. They work in conjunction with the RCMP when they need to, and it works well. The reasons to oppose Alberta's creation of a force are political rather than practical. If the RCMP does end contract services, provinces reliant upon them would be well served to prepare for the transition now rather than rushing when the time comes. They must
7 years is not a lot of time.
No, to make a whole police force. You got to build like offices and all that kind of stuff. If the RCMP does end contract service, provinces, I read that already, right? They must be able to set aside partisan brinkmanship to do it right, though. If Alberta is any example, it won't be easy for politicians and activists to do so.
Well, we're running into a challenge too. I'd like to do more on this on one of our shows, but I was watching a video about the UK. Somebody's doing investigative work in the UK. It sounds very similar to Canada with what's happening with the police. So they did these, they set up some bikes, a bike to be stolen. And then they tracked how the cops do it. And they don't take care of any of these small crimes anymore. Right. I mean, we know that's happening. Like, it's happened to me personally in Calgary. It's happening, I'm sure, all over Canada, but the UK, this guy is doing really good research on like something like 1% of these things get investigated. The people that get let out after sometimes weeks or months go on to commit 15 more crimes. There's ridiculous stats, and it's really, there's some really easy fixes. They did a clampdown, like a study almost, like they clamped down on this one bike gang. They arrest 7 guys and it dropped the bike thefts down 90%, you know, so there's it, but people don't want to, who wants to work? What kind of cops want to work for, an organization that's just going to let the criminals out, right? That don't even care about stopping crime or anything like that. I mean, there's these people that steal hundreds of phones a day. They have a phone theft problem.
Yeah, I was going to mention the phone one. That's probably the other one that is, you would imagine, pretty easily tracked.
They tracked a supply chain right to China. right? The phone gets stolen. It goes to this place. Then it goes to this other place. Then it's off to China within a couple of days. The phone's already getting disassembled in China for parts.
Whoa. Yeah. All right. You want to do your survey? And then I got one to finish it up with. That's just kind of funny.
Oh, I thought you had the survey. I can do it.
I don't
know. You want to do it or do you want me to do it?
I want you to do it.
Okay, yeah. I'll do it.
If I try and do that now, it's going to be a shit show.
Yeah, I thought you had it ready. Okay, here we go. So this is BC Ferries, because, I mean, we should have talked about this a long time ago, but dear reader. We talked
about it on the show a few times about the Chinese contracts and that kind of stuff.
I did a bit of an analysis on it too, because I want to kind of rant a little bit about this too. It's just infuriating what's been happening.
I think so, we did the one where they were getting the things built in China and they weren't allowing EVs on them if they were any dents in them or anything.
Yeah. So BC Ferries has signed a contract with a Chinese state-owned shipyard to build four new major ferries, supported by a $1 billion loan from a federal agency. Now, I think this has been called a subsidy unfairly in a lot of people's replies to all this and a lot of the controversy over this. So it's not a subsidy. It's just a low interest loan, which I don't really have a problem with, except that it's going to China instead of one of our own. Like, it should be going to our own shipyards, and we should be building capacity in our shipyards if we don't have it yet. It's unbelievable. We'll get into those details later. Let's do this first. The decision has sparked discussion around public funding, procurement practices, and Canada's approach to international partnerships. You're invited to take a short survey to share your views. Here are just a few questions we're asking. So I think I'm just going to go past that because we're going to see them in the survey. Your perspective helps us better understand how Canadians view this issue. We look forward to sharing the results. Okay, here we go. Take the survey now. It's not sharing that screen. It's not giving me the option to share it either. I don't know why that is. So
are you on Google?
Oh, no. You know what? That's exactly what it is. I wasn't in Google. All right. So here we go. I'm going to zoom in on this a little bit here. Let's see. All right. BC Ferries recently awarded a contract to this Chinese shipyard to build four new ferries, supported by a $1 billion federal loan. The deal and the funding behind it have sparked public debate. Do you support BC Ferries' decision to give this contract? Oh, these are just going to be crazy. Okay, owned by the Chinese government. No, I don't support it. Next. What concerns do you have about this deal? Select all that apply. Okay, here you go, Darren. Should prioritize Canadian industry and jobs? Yes. Canadian tax dollars supporting a hostile regime? Is that a concern to you? You call China hostile? Yeah. National security risks?
That too.
Okay. Beijing's espionage and transnational. What?
Those next three, probably all of them except for the bottom one.
Chinese role in fentanyl, Chinese interference in the elections, human rights violations, no major concerns other. Okay. So that, but I mean, you know, the problem is I have more concerns. I have more economic concerns than all these other ones. Do you trust BC Ferries to independently assess and manage my security risks? No. Do you?
No. No.
Do you believe Canadian or allied shipbuilders should be given preference?
Yes.
Yes. Should foreign state-owned enterprises like those backed by the Chinese government be barred from building Canadian public infrastructure? Fuck.
Yes.
I don't know. You think? Barred? Foreign state-owned enterprises? Barred? I mean, they're already buying ships from China. Did you know that? There's 100. We bought 100 ships from China, like, for fucking public stuff and, like, government.
Yeah, all private infrastructure should be built by Canadians.
Yeah.
Unless it can't be.
Well, what about only in sensitive sectors? See, that's the thing. Okay, let's just
go. It should be all sectors. We got a major unemployment problem.
Yeah, I know. We're falling apart. I know. Before news of the $1 billion loan, Freeland urged her BC counterpart to verify and confirm that no federal funding would go toward the deal. Meanwhile, David Eby says he does not plan to intervene. In your view, what should the government do now? Select all that apply. Ottawa or BC, either of those, should step in and assess the risks. The government should cancel the loan. Ottawa should intervene and stop the deal on national security grounds. BC Premier should intervene and cancel the deal. Ottawa should set rules to block non-allied firms from public infrastructure contacts. None. Let the deal proceed. I don't know. This is a tricky question. I don't like backing out of deals. So what do you do?
Yeah, now? It's tricky now. The loan.
I don't care about the loan. If it's a low interest loan, that's for for a BC ferry.
Why does BC have the money?
What?
BC doesn't have the money.
BC Ferries. Well, no. I guess not. I mean, they're not a crown corporation, apparently, but they're funded by the province.
But they're a private corporation?
No, they're not private either.
So they're a provincial corporation?
I think so. I've got a bit of an analysis to go through after this, but
not sure.
Not sure. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Yeah. How would you rate the Canadian media's coverage of the BC Ferries deal and other infrastructure problems, contracts involving China?
Poor.
Okay. If there were a new media outlet in Canada, oh, here we go. Here's the pitch for Epic. Based on all our surveys, Canada needs a new media. We're the ones. We'll step in. That is fact-based, politically unbiased, and consistently investigated the most pressing issues. Would you like to try it? Yes. Done. Did you know only 32% of Canadians trust the media? Yeah. Here we go. What? Yeah. Okay, let me go to my email and see if I got the results. Not yet. Maybe I didn't... Did they not ask me to plug my email in? They must know me already, right?
Huh. They must know you.
I thought I was going to get the... there's nothing that tells me I'm going to get the... they will be sent to my email. Okay. So anyways, in the meantime, you know, I did ask for some help on this because I really did want to know, like, what's going on with the ferries and stuff. And... where is it here? So the controversy. So the problem is here. I'll just share my Grok answers a little bit here with you.
Grok a lock. Did you see that thing where it was someone posted some stuff that Grok was just cruising through what Elon would think?
Yeah. Oh, that's the wrong one. Share this tab instead. So we kind of went through a lot of it. David Ebby. The $1 billion low interest loan. So here's the weird thing. They were expected to save $650 million in interest charges compared to market rates. So there was a public union backlash, of course, as well, citing, you know, lost opportunities and everything.
How much were they going to save?
$650 million in interest charges.
So that's fine. We can loan them money. They're not saving the money by going to China, though. They're saving it by getting it from the government.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I don't have a problem with that. If a government's going to help with capital, I don't think that I'd rather that than a subsidy to save companies and stuff. So, but BC Ferries selected this after a rigorous global bidding process, citing the shipyard's technical strength, safety standards, and experience with Transport Canada requirements. Timely delivery and cost effectiveness. No Canadian shipyards submitted bids for the contract, despite invitations to participate. Now, we know why that is, right? I mean, if you know that you're not capable to do it, obviously you can't submit a bid they answered the question like, we can't compete with China's labor rates and all that. So the contract value was not disclosed to protect future procurement competitiveness, but it is a multi-billion dollar deal, of course, right? So apparently they were going to save like $1 billion by going to China. Now, like, tell me, would it not be, there's got to be somebody doing calculations that say putting $1 billion, even though it's more, into our economy would be maybe only cost you $500 million or $300 million more in total once it's all sort of leveled out, right?
It's crazy.
There's got to be a calculation there, right? That says, of course, we can spend more money if it's internally.
It shouldn't even just be a calculation. It should just be, I mean, it's not always about the money. You know what I mean? Like, we could always get shit cheaper in China.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. But I'm just trying to be scientific.
You know, like, should we just, maybe it's just.
For
the private sector is fine. The private sector should be able to make those decisions on if they want to buy something in China because it saves money, because they got to pay taxes and still keep the doors open and all that sort of stuff. But this is a non-for-profit public entity. It's like letting China build the school buses. It's fucking nuts.
I know. So here's several factors why Canadian shipyards, particularly in BC, did not bid or secure the ferries contract, and why domestic ferry construction was not prioritized. No Canadian shipyards, including BC-based Seaspan, you're gonna laugh at this, submitted bids, of course, right? Seaspan explicitly stated that Canadian shipyards cannot compete with low-wage countries like China, which have lower labor, environmental, and safety standards. The procurement process prioritized cost, technical capability, and delivery timelines, which disadvantage Canadian shipyards unable to match China's pricing on schedules. And that's the thing. I mean, they should have been planning this a long time ago, developing our industry to actually build our own ferries. Like, the fact that that's not happening in the background.
Well, and now if that happened in the private sector, someone would lose their job for it, right?
Exactly. So here's the limited domestic capacity. Canadians' major shipyards, such as Seaspan and
last ones.
What?
Who built the ones we're using now?
There was the Fast Ferry fiasco back in the 90s, I think it was, or the 80s, where I think it was a Scandinavian company and they didn't even work. They were causing too much of a wave or some sort of wake or something like that. All right. So Seaspan and Irving Shipbuilding are fully booked. Get this, Darren. Our shipbuilders are fully booked with federal contracts for the Navy and the Coast Guard under the 2010 National Shipbuilding Strategy. These commitments, which includes billions of funding, have left little capacity for civilian projects like ferries for at least a decade. So that's their excuse. Oh, we're fully booked with government stuff. So fuck your civilian stuff. Are you there?
I'm checking some stuff out.
The lack of spare capacity is compounded by the fact that two of Canada's three major shipyards.
How many ships do you think they built since 2010?
Which one? Seaspan?
That thing that took the capacity away from.
I don't want to know the answer to this. Five?
Four.
That's unbelievable.
Since 2010, under Canada's National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy, the Royal Canadian Navy has built and commissioned four military ships domestically.
In 15 years. This is why, this is a microcosm.
And it took them a decade, it seems like, because the HMCS Harry DeWolf was commissioned in June 26, 2021. The Margaret Brooke was commissioned October 28th, 2022. The Max Bernays entered service May 3rd. That sounds like Max and Bernier. It's like they named it for him for being a liberal shill. And the William Hall was commissioned May 16th, 2024.
Unbelievable. So here, get this. Its lack of spare capacity is compounded by the fact that two of Canada's three main shipyards, what do you think I'm about to say? Two of the three main shipyards are
Irving.
No. What are they? Like, two of them. One of them, we know that it's Irving and Seaspan, but not their names, but what are they as a category? They're foreign owned. Two out of the three are foreign owned, and they're all prioritized for military and Coast Guard vessels. The cost disparity. So building ferries in Canada would cost significantly more. Okay. Potentially hundreds of millions, big deal, or even 1.2 billion. So we're going to put 15 or 20 billion. We're going to spend 22 billion a year on consultants, and we can't spend an extra billion on our own ferries to increase our economy.
Without even talking about 8 billion a year in foreign aid and 25 billion to Ukraine over the last 2 years.
Right. China dominates.
And 55 billion on debt, on interest to ourselves.
China dominates global shipbuilding, constructing 60% of the world's ships, and benefits from economies of scale, lower labor costs, and state subsidies. So they're going to subsidize that so that we spend money with them instead of building our own economy, making its bids highly competitive. European shipyards previously used by BC ferries, probably like the fast ferry ones, were also considered but $1.2 billion more expensive than the Chinese option. So here's our failure to expand domestic shipbuilding. In 2021, the BC NDP government promised, this is why this politics stuff drives me fucking bonkers. They promised a made in BC shipbuilding strategy to revive the local industry. But critics argued it failed to deliver due to insufficient investment and planning. The federal government subsidizes military and Coast Guard shipbuilding, but has not extended similar support to civilian ferry construction, leaving BC ferries to prioritize cost over local content. I mean, I don't think they should be subsidizing it anyways. C-SPAN noted that a domestic build would require significant government subsidies. Why? Why can't they just pay? Why can't they just use a low interest loan and pay it without subsidies? Why is it so complicated? Increase your capacity. Put some investment into it.
Make a new one.
That prioritizes Canadian content over price, which was not the case here. So urgent need for fleet renewal. So here's going to be the lack of planning, right? Their aging fleet, like with vessels like Queen of New West built in 64 and others nearing 50 years, has faced costly breakdowns and delay, necessitating urgent replacements. For example, a prop failure costs $5.5 million in repairs and $8.5 million in lost revenue. Reopening the bidding process to favor Canadian shipyards would delay delivery and increase costs, potentially leading to service disruptions and higher fares for passengers. So, I mean, this is what's happened to these big corporations. They are so slow, they can't even plan properly. They can't even plan for replacing old ferries. Like, it's infuriating. BC Ferries operate as an independent company under the Company Act since 2003, not a Crown Corp, giving it autonomy in operating decisions like procurement. The provincial government, despite being the sole preferred shareholder and providing funding, did not mandate Canadian content or intervene in the decisions. The federal government's role is limited to subsidies, example, $37.8 million annually, and the CIB loan, but it has no direct control over the contracting decisions. I don't know. It's like what you say about the airports being a microcosm of our society's collapse. This is like a microcosm of Canada's collapse.
It's a bigger microcosm. Well, this is my last thing. Maybe finish it up. This tariff windfall drives a surprise $27 billion U.S. budget surplus in June. Which is interesting because I think inflation just went down there too, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the opposite of what?
We're going to fight harder this time now. We're going to fight back. All the advisors in the media fight, beat the U.S. with their own tariffs. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, why don't you just do what the fuck he says instead of making us further in the hole? It's unbelievable.
New data from the Treasury Department show that surging tariff revenues in June helped the U.S. government post an unexpected budget surplus of $27 billion. Offering a rare fiscal bright spot amid persistently high federal deficits and suggesting that President Donald Trump's tariff policies are becoming a significant source of government revenue. After running a $316 billion deficit in May, the government recorded a surplus of just over $27 billion last month. The tariff windfall helped narrow the fiscal year-to-date deficit to $1.34 trillion, a slight 1% improvement from the same period last year. 1% on a trillion is a lot.
Yeah.
It's like a couple, it's hundreds of billion. No, that's a
thousand. It's 100 billion.
100 billion or 10 billion.
10 billion?
10 billion, I think.
10 billion.
The key driver of the improved balance was a record-breaking surge in custom duties. The Treasury data released on Friday showed that the tariff collection soared to $27 billion in June alone, pushing total tariff revenue since October to $108 billion, the highest ever recorded for the first 9 months of a fiscal year. June's haul marked a significant jump from May's prior record of $22 billion and was about 93% higher than the $56 billion collected during the same nine-month span of the previous year. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has predicted even higher tariff revenues in the months ahead. Speaking at a July 8th White House cabinet meeting, he said the United States is on track to collect $300 billion by the end of calendar year 2025, noting that the major tariffs imposed under Trump's administration did not start until the second quarter. Since returning to the White House for the second term, Trump has imposed 10% universal tariffs on trading partners, along with reciprocal tariffs announced in April on a number of nations. I think that's okay. The big money will start coming in on August 1st. I think I was made clear today by the letters that were sent out yesterday and today, he said during the cabinet meeting. So more recently, Trump sent another round of letters noting that Algeria, Iraq, Libya, and Sri Lanka will each be charged a 30% tariff. Brunei and Moldova will face a 25% tariff, and the Philippines will face a 20% tariff. And Canada, 35, baby.
35% extra. Yeah. And that's, but I mean, I think what's missing in this whole picture is the fact that, again, especially with, let's just say with Canada, is we're just not able to sell, we're not able to buy as much from the States as they buy from us, right? I mean, I think that's the main problem. Like we can't have any of their banking up here, any of the telecom stuff, any of their, what was the other dairy. Thing? I was, what?
Dairy.
Dairy. Well, I mean, sure, dairy, all that kind of stuff, but. Even what was the other? There was another thing. Oh, healthcare stuff. Like, I mean, we just don't have the back and forth, right? So, there, as a percentage, you know, they're spending way more on us than we are on them. I think that's the core issue with the States and the world. I mean, if it was leveled out, the States would be very, very rich.
Yeah,
I'll read you what he said in the last page of his letter to Carney, which is getting lambasted here with our elbows up crowd. If Canada works with me to stop the flow of fentanyl, we will perhaps consider an adjustment to this letter. Excuse me. These tariffs may be modified upward or downward depending on our relationship with your country. You will never be disappointed with the United States of America. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Ba-da-ba. We hope you aren't disappointed with our coverage here on the A-List. Like, subscribe, share, comment, all that fun stuff. Support us at a-list.ca. If you feel like it, you can listen to it in podcast form there as well. Of course, check out grammerica.ca for our other podcast. Contact at thecabin.com for tours and events. Adultbrain.ca for audiobooks, ebooks, and print books. And bigskytallow.ca for tallow. We shipped the first order out today, so we can ship to the States. It's cheaper to ship to the States than it is to ship across Canada.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, right? We'll see if it makes it over the border, though. Actually, going there is not bad. It's when they come here, usually they show up at my house and they're like, you owe us another $100.
But that's what I was going to say. So the CBD, there's CBD restrictions. Like we couldn't get CBD shipped over here. There's going to be nicotine restrictions coming. So again, we're restricting all this flow from the States, including all the dairy and all that, right? Trump put that in his letter about the tariffs, about the dairy, about the supply management thing, right? I mean, and nobody wants to talk about all the waste that's producing, right? That's just nobody seems to give a shit that's wasting a whole bunch of dairy that we're trying to keep it out. Prices. They're trying to keep the prices stable.
For they talk about sustainability. They're dumping dairy down this. They're not trying to keep it sustainable. They're trying to keep it more expensive so that their income is more
stable. Stable, I said.
Stable income.
Well, anyway. They say it's for the consumers, stable prices for the consumers.
You don't dump out 30,000 gallons of milk to help the consumer. And I'm paying $7 a gallon.
I know, it's unbelievable. Keep it stably high.
Stably high. Keep the support stably high at a-list.ca. Other than that, we love you guys. Have a good weekend. And we'll see you on Tuesday.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrities post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow.